I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Yeah, everybody disperse. Everybody move back. That's what time it is. Check it out. It's the end of the world. It's the end of the world.
There is a little bit of hip-hop there. You can hear it mixed in with the call to prayer and all the other sounds. But at this point in the performance, in fact, during most of the show, it is the dancers who have your eye. This is a performance of Rennie Harris's new dance called Facing Mecca. And that's Mecca with two Ks. So once again, you can prepare yourself for something other than the predictable. The unconventional choreographer Harris will tell you that this particular dance has been in the works for nearly 3 years. It's now on a U.S. tour. And it continues to evolve. It is one more step for Rennie Harris in taking his own roots in hip-hop dance into new associations with world music and with traditional African dance, and further along what he sees as his own spiritual journey. Connection listeners, how far afield can the lines to and from hip-hop be stretched? Whether we're talking about the music or the dance, is hip-hop a culture all on its own? Or is it a more curious form of artistic expression, one that borrows and absorbs from every bit of music and dance that it encounters? And how does hip-hop change when it moves from the streets to the stage? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, we've got a couple of musicians in the studio with us, a singer and a tabla player, who are touring with Rennie Harris's Pure Movement Dance Company. We'll meet them, talk to them, and hear their music in just a moment. But let's start with the choreographer himself. Rennie Harris is sitting across the table from me. Welcome to The Connection.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Did we choose a good representation of the Facing Mecca just in that little bit?
Yeah, I thought that was fine, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what's happening on the stage when we're listening to that music? What people would be seeing?
That particular music?
Well, I'm maybe putting you to too much work to say.
Well,
that's
the bow music, actually. So people are taking bows at that moment. So, people are dancing, you know, and doing their thing, basically.
The music is a long, long way away from what people think of hip-hop when they listen to what's on the Billboard charts, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think right now, you know, what you're seeing is the institutionalization of hip-hop, and which means hip-hop is being defined by
by the commercial
the corporate world, yeah.
By the record companies,
yeah.
And what's going to sell.
Yeah, so for us, you know, and for me, you know, I understand hip hop from a place where there's no limits to it, and the foundation of that is to change it, to surprise people, to innovate. You know, so you was always challenged to innovate movement or either rhymes or writing or deep music or whatever. You're always challenged to do that, and of course, you know, in doing that, you're always looking outside of your culture or your structure to bring this change. And of course, once you find this specific change, whatever it may be, it takes a different form because it's you. So, you know, if I took movement from let's say from a ballet company, it's not going to look the same if I do it because my body's not trained for ballet. So it totally takes the form of something else. And most of the time, people to the naked eye, no one knows where it's coming from. You know what I mean? But I mean, such as America, that's how things are broken down here. We've all are influenced by each other and all the different cultures. So we have this culture called American culture now, you know, which, you know, we're young, you know, and now we have an American culture. Before it was us separate and us, you know, trying desperately for some people to hold on to identity for culture. And then we kind of bought into this thing of losing our identity to become American, which is cool. But I think also it's important for us to be very clear about our own heritage, because there's, you know, we also bought into the idea of that, you know, we're separated by color, but rather we're really separated by culture, and color has nothing to do with it. So there's and for me, there's no white and black. You know what I mean? There's people of culture.
Now, somebody said to me that years ago, I guess would have been in the 70s, one of your earliest influences of hip-hop was watching Soul Train on television, and there's this little 5 or 6-year-old Rennie Harris standing in front of the television imitating some of the moves. Is that accurate? Did it start there for you?
I don't know if I was imitating the moves when I saw it, but I just remember just sitting and watching it. I don't remember trying to get up to imitate the movement. I just remember thinking, like, I had never seen anything like that before. So I was kind of like, you know how when you watch cartoons and you just got the glaze on your eyes? And it was pretty much like that, more or less.
I spent many a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
But when we go back to some of the early hip-hop songs, is that where the dance comes from as well? When we look at the roots of hip-hop dance, in the music as well?
Yeah. Well, like everything, I think, you know, the music defines the movement. So what we're talking, I mean, just in general, really, when you think about it, hip hop is just a term that we use to define this generation and expression via, you know, that's coming from not just this generation, but the generation before it. But really the truth is that music defines the action, you know what I mean? I mean, inspires the action, you know, the action being the expression, you know what I mean? So,
but the music is an expression as well.
Yes, but the music also is an expression via the experience, via the social, what's going on politically in the country. So if you want to know about a dance movement specifically, you study what was going on politically in that time, in that era. And if what was going on politically influences people's expression, i.e. the music starts, then comes after the word, it comes the action.
From the south to the west, to the east, to the north, come on, Spoonie G, and go off and go off. Yes, y'all, a freak, y'all, to the beat, y'all, it's so unique, y'all. Well, I was beating down the street, then I pushed my brake, because I seen a fine girl, made me shiver and shake. Then I blew my horn, and she turned ahead, and to the younger lady, this is what I said. I said, baby, come on over to my car, and tell me your name so I can know who you are, and just give me your number, address, and all. I might want to see you, I might want to call. Your friend's house, your house, wherever you be, but meanwhile, baby doll, just come with me. So I open my door.
Spoonie G and the Treacherous Three from 23 years ago. Isn't that scary? do you mark Spoonie G, Sugar Hill Gang? Are those kind of like milestones that you refer back to? Because when I listen to the music that you have now, it seems a long way away.
Well, not necessarily Sugar Hill Gang. Sugar Hill Gang was probably the beginning of, you know, the introduction. The world got introduced to what was happening 10 years prior, you know what I mean, in the 80s. So Spoonie G was probably the end, like the part of that last, you know, still holding on to the authentic, you know, kind of hip-hop that I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was, he became recorded, and he was moving in, him and the Treacherous Three, they all were moving towards something different, but that style and the music, you know, is what I remember as hip hop. And there's music before that, so you know, the Disco 4+1, Funky 4+1 More, all these other cats who were doing it when there was no record, and they were rhyming over breakbeats of other records and got taped, and so that the tape, the recording of that was them doing their thing live. And that's what I kind of remember. I mean, this is before they were calling it hip-hop.
Now, if we go back in your own career as a dancer, there was a point when you were just dancing, and there was a point at which people were paying you to dance. You would tour with Run DMC, right, and Houdini and some of the better-known acts. The dancing that you were doing at the time, were you... Well, you got no classical training. You had no training as a dancer at all? You weren't dance classes or modern dance classes?
Well, no, I have training in hip-hop. That's it, you know what I mean? So that's the difference. I think, you know, I was saying to someone the other day, I thought, like, someone saw me dance when I was younger, and they said, hey, we're going to take you to a class to learn how to dance because you're a great dancer. And I remember laughing at them. I don't know if I was 8 or 9 or something. I just started laughing. And, like, what's funny? I said, well, people, I didn't understand. People go to school to learn how to dance? You know, it's still kind of crazy to me that people actually go to school to learn how to dance. How do you teach spirit? You know what I mean? you know, you can teach technique, but how do you teach experience, and how do you teach communing and just living in that way? You know, so for me, you know, my class, quote unquote, was, you know, the experience of living. And what we always forget is that as people, we're a culture, so we all have folklore. Dance is not something outside of us. Dance has become something outside of us via the political hold on in history. You know what I mean? So when it was outlawed, and when they thought you were being possessed by something other than the king or the queen, you know, it became, okay, we're going to control it now. And so now it has structure. Now it has definition. It has technique. And anything outside of that is not civilized. You know what I mean? It's not considered as, you know, formal.
But some of that is something that you're participating with in an obscure kind of way, in that when you take hip hop dance from the street or the club or wherever and put it on a concert stage, mm-hmm. you are putting it in a different kind of place and saying, well, it's a performance that's going to run, what, an hour and a half long, mm-hmm. and this, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily, because the foundation of hip hop is to adapt. It that's why it was able to be in the street at the same time it was able to be at the talent show, at the same time it was presented at the church, at the block party or the barbecue or in your house or in your basement. You know, hip hop, the environment changes, it changes. You know what I mean? So for me, I think that if I bring it into the theater, it's no different than doing it on the street. I mean, the only difference, or quote unquote, in the community, not the street, but the only one major difference is I have more toys to play with, you know, in the theater. You know, one of the things, you know, I mean,
you have lighting.
Yeah, lighting and stuff like that. I mean, I didn't care about that stuff. And I mean, now I'm getting into, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. But, you know, for a long time, up until like 2000, I mean, I had the biggest arguments with lighting directors and all these other people, because I was like, turn the lights on. I don't care, as long as you can see us. It's not that deep, because I feel like the movement, you know, any one of the works, I can, you know, I feel like any one of my works, you can present it in a studio with full lighting, where everyone's sitting, and you'll still get it. You know what I mean? Without all the stuff. And what I saw in the very beginning with a lot of other works, with modern dance, a lot of us heavily relied on the production value. And then there's like, okay, the dance and the dance aesthetic that's part of it. But really, you should be able to tell a ballet right in the middle of the street. You should be able to tell about on that corner in the community. Let's see the truth behind it, you know, and not have it covered up, you know. And that's not disrespect to the fine arts world, but rather just that's pretty part of the value of what hip hop challenges you to be innovative all the time. You cannot, you know, get in there and say, okay, this is hip hop, and then leave it at that, because it becomes stagnant. It moves. It continues to evolve into something else.
And Connection listeners, the evolution of Rennie Harris's hip-hop is going alongside the dance with the music, and we'll get a chance to meet the musicians who are part of his new dance, Facing Mecca, when we come back after the break. We'd like to have you join us. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And tell us whether or not you see any kind of boundaries here, or whether or not you're agreeing with Rennie's description of where hip-hop can go and what it is, whether or not it should even be defined. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon, my guest in the studio. You've been listening to Rennie Harris, dancer, choreographer, artistic director of Rennie Harris Pure Movement, founded that company 11 years ago, and is right now touring the United States with a new program called Facing Mecca. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that we have other people in the studio, and it's my pleasure to bring in now Philip Hamilton and Lenny Seidman. Philip Hamilton does vocals and percussion in Facing Mecca. In the late 1990s, was lead vocalist with the Pat Metheny Group, now has his own group called Philip Hamilton Group. Philip, nice to have you here on the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And Lenny Seidman plays tabla and other percussion on stage in Facing Mecca, has worked on a number of dance projects with Rennie Harris over the past decade or so, also works as world music and jazz curator at the Painted Bride Arts Center in Philadelphia. Lenny, it's nice to have you here.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Let me start, Philip, with you, because at the moment when Rennie was talking about the need for hip-hop to evolve, I'm thinking to myself, to my right here, I have a jazz singer who probably knows more about the kind of the way that music evolves. In a way, I was listening to what Rennie was saying about hip-hop and saying, that's describing jazz.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's how I feel. It's funny because as Rennie was talking too, I was thinking about my own evolution. I mean, I grew up in Medford, West Medford, so I'm a hometown
boy.
Close to home. And what happened to me was I was listening to funk, you know, in the 70s, while everybody else, well, I mean, I was dancing too, you know, many pounds ago, but, you know, funk and listening to Cameo and Mandrill, Earth, Wind & Fire and all of that. But what happened was I started to, listening to Ella Fitzgerald and Al Jarreau and the other jazz singers, and I started to evolve, and then eventually I started to listen to Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan and Youssou N'Dour, and then, you know, the whole world music thing started to happen for me. But the base of it was it's always been funk, which has come to be known as hip hop nowadays. So yeah, it parallels jazz, it parallels funk, it just parallels the many transitions that Americans and American music has gone through over the years. It's still the same spirit, which is what Rennie was talking about earlier. The same spirit has been consistent throughout the years.
You talk about Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, and earlier, and just as you guys were setting up, Lenny and I were talking about Zakir Hussain, who is a world-renowned tabla player, and for people who can't imagine the geography of the studio right now, I have Lenny actually sitting on the floor across from me because he has to be down with his tabla. Zakir Hussain, also, I guess, an example of an Eastern musician who's got something to contribute to exactly the type of evolution in North American music we're talking about, Lenny.
Absolutely. When he was a teenager, he would be seen walking the streets of Bombay carrying a boombox, listening to what have you, you know, funk, jazz, pop, rock. So he was interested, right, you know, as a youngster, you know, in the various Western forms, and now he's evolved to the point where he's probably one of the foremost ambassadors of so-called world music. I don't know what that means anymore. But
people must still look at you and the tabla and go, well, what's this got to do with hip-hop? Where does this percussion instrument fit in hip-hop? I mean, I know you've been doing it for 10 years, but let me ask you the question that way anyway.
Tabla is a traditional drum. It's one of the many traditional drums throughout the world. And when I first met Rennie, I discovered artistic hip hop dance for the first time, and he tells the story that he discovered tabla for the first time when we met. We did this residency that was led by Zakir Hussain back in 1991, and over the years, I think that tabla is the kind of instrument that it's a classical instrument of North India. But there are also folk styles of tabla playing, which are very funky. Again, the word funk comes up.
Can you give me an example of the distinction between the two? I don't know if you can play and talk at the same time.
But. No, I can't discuss something while I'm playing. But I can tell you, this is a classical representation, okay? This is the first I'll play a classical representation and then something that I might use. But don't get me wrong. I use classical playing inside of this hip-hop as well. They work because hip hop is so flexible and absorbs art and culture from all over the world. It always has. So anyway,
Lenny Seidman on the tablet. Okay. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So that would be a theme from a composition, traditional composition called a kaida, which is funky too. And now for something in facing Mecca, let me see if I can think of something funky that I've been doing. Okay. Something like that just really has
a vamp kind of effect or something like this.
And Rennie Harris, you're the choreographer. You're listening to this music, and you don't even pause. You know how this is going to fit with the type of dance that you have in your mind?
Oh, yeah, I, without a doubt. I don't think really, you know, I mean, just from the basic, you know, again, just from knowing hip-hop before it was called hip-hop, people were, it was just like a vast, you know, I mean, there was no limits. You know, people were taking music from taking classical music, they were taking jazz, they took rock. A lot of hip-hop foundation and music was built off of rock breaks from, like, Queen and all these other, these cats like that, and Rolling Stones and all that. People didn't know it when we were listening to the music. We didn't know where the music was coming from, because that was the DJ saying, finding all this crazy, what we would call crazy music, and then, and like, playing with it and distorting the sound and changing the RPMs and just really like freaking it out with a MC over top of that, and we're like, oh my God, where did you get this music from, you know? And so the tabla, it makes sense from the get go, you know. When I thought about it, when I met Lenny, it was very, I'm gonna say not intrusive. It was very external. Like, it was the first time I heard it, just for it. First time I ever heard a tabla sound.
Let me just stop you, because speaking of world music, we have a call on the line from Tokyo, Japan, and Huntley's joining us. Hi, Huntley.
How you doing?
Listening to us on the internet, are you?
Yeah, I do it quite a bit here, it seems.
Well, it's nice to have you on the program. What are you hearing? What are you thinking?
Well, since I spoke with, I guess, your call screen there for a moment, I started to reflect over the past 20 years. And back in 1982, I was working on what has become, in Europe anyway, a well-known documentary on breakdancing and hip-hopping. It's hip-hop music and rap. It's a film called Breaking and Entering. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it, but it was done when I lived in L.A. And living here in Japan, something that I've noticed over the past 9 years that I've lived here, this is my home, I'm permanently a resident here, is that I see kids, when I say kids, I mean high school students, junior high school students, practicing after school in the schoolyard, practicing these hip-hop dance routines. And for a long time, I would, you know, observe them or, you know, passing by, and I'd say, hey, what are you doing? Often I've found that as an African-American, I was born and brought up in Roxbury, I found that, you know, African-Americans are not treated as well as whites here in Japan. And I'm wondering why you're embracing my culture but disrespecting me. And listening to your conversations here on the radio, it's 12:30 a.m. here and I'm still working. So it's your morning and it's my morning also. I'm beginning to have a greater appreciation for what I see these young people doing. They're progressing towards embracing me as a human being rather than, gaijin, which is what you call a foreigner here.
Rennie, this is part of what you talk about in the dance being part of a spiritual journey, no?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I think, you know, the reality of it is that dance is a worship, and that everyone has a part of their culture. And that it's interesting. You know, I mean, again, this term hip-hop is a term from the 30s. It's not anything new. So we just stamped it that, you know, to represent a specific generation or a collective consciousness of that generation. And as Philip mentioned earlier, the same spirit, that spirit that drives humans to be free, to have individual voice, and to worship a structure as a guideline and not a godline, you know, exists to all the expressions that we have as humans. And one of the best thing, one of the things that no one can get around via the expression, through the expression, is that when they're moved, when they're inspired to do something, inspired means in spirit, is spirit moving. So through the word, through music, or through dance, God is going to speak to you in that way. And it breaks down all the boundaries and all the little color things that we have with each other. And if you've seen through, even from commercial to pop culture to fine arts, it's through expression that that I feel like God is able to speak and move people to keep people balanced.
Let me just turn to Philip here, because you're listening to Huntley speaking mm-hmm. to us in Japan yeah. about being on the street there watching right. the Japanese teenagers yeah. in you know draw from the music which is being has been invented and kind of changed and altered in America. Does it surprise you at all?
No. Actually, it's funny because I was talking to somebody the other day. The same thing happened to me. I went to Paris about 1987 for the first time. You know, young kid, you know, went to Paris, and all of a sudden there was like a big skateboarding tournament going on there, and all the music was all the like hip hop, African American music, R&B, and I was so totally surprised. You know, I was like, you know, same thing. Where it was like, well, how did these folks know about our music? And you know, I started to talk to the folks, you know, the Parisian teenagers, and just they knew more about it than I did. And the same thing happened subsequently as I started to travel. I found out that hip hop and the music of America has influenced most of the world. But that goes back to what you were talking about earlier, like how is the tabla part of world music? What happened is with the advent right now of sampling music, where you take the music, you just take a bit of it, and then you kind of the producers and the DJs are kind of like the composers of today, where they can sample music. So that has helped with the bringing the world music cultures together. So you hear tabla a lot on a lot of the recordings that you a lot of hip hop recordings nowadays. But also, what happened was R&B and hip hop went to India, and then they took it and they switched it around and added their influences. The German folks added their
right.
Everybody added their influence and sent it back to the United States. So, it's what is hip hop? What is hip hop music? It's just as much world music. I mean, we're ready to groove to anything nowadays.
Huntley, I'm gonna ask Philip to sing a little bit here. So I want to thank you for calling in all the way from Tokyo. Nice to have you on the program.
And we'll be out there soon.
Hey, how about that? Watch for them. Okay. Philip, what do you want to do?
Well, actually, I'm going to do there's kind of like a spiritual thing that we've incorporated into the show. What happened was there was like a transition period. Yeah, during the particular performance, when you come and see it, there's a part where kind of like, you know, there's the muezzin, or the person that calls to prayer. And then after a while, Rennie and I start to figure out that the person that calls to prayer is very similar to an old blues singer, too. So, you know, like he's the one that basically tells the story. You know, like if you go down south and somebody's singing a song about, you know, the cultural experience of that particular time, that's very similar to someone who is... you know, someone from, say, the Middle East.
Like a minstrel.
Minstrel, but also I'm more bringing the spirituality into it, where it's like somebody who just talks about the spirit of the time. So here's a combination of a blues and a call to prayer that we do during Facing Mecca. Well, if you love me, Lord, won't you set me free? 'Cause my mind is chained to the way it all should be. In these times of wars over philosophies, and all the while we're crying for equality. If you love me, Lord, you should send a sign. Maybe your son can visit and spend some time. He could tell the stories of how it all should be, and change wine from water so we'd all believe. Oh, yeah. No.
Philip Hamilton, Lenny Seidman, Rennie Harris here in the studio. They are all part of a new dance piece called Facing Mecca from Rennie Harris's Pure Movement Group. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. To Tewksbury, Massachusetts, and Michelle's joining us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm a total believer now. I feel like you've already answered my question, but what I was wondering was how you feel that hip-hop has been influenced by the blues.
Mm-hmm. Let me first also say we're going to be here. We're in Boston, and we're going to be performing at the Emerson Majestic tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. In case any of you cats, Bostonians want to come out.
I'm there.
Oh, cool. I always thought of hip-hop. Hip-hop basically was rhythm and blues. It talked about pain. It talks about pain and, you know, where we're going, where we're at. You know, it was like the griot, you know. And so to me, you know, all what they call the gangster rap, that's all that is to me rhythm and blues glorified, you know what I mean, in a way that, you know, is pushing, you know, I guess what, you know, we are about as humans, violence. So, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of parallels within rhythm and blues and hip-hop. And also let me say that, you know, like Philip mentioned earlier, that all it is, I mean, it was called rhythm and blues, then they called it rock and roll, then they called it jazz, and then, you know, bebop swing, you know, now they call it the hip-hop. It's the same urge as that we, you know, it's like, to me, like, God keeps saying, no, I want you to understand freedom and freedom of choice and individuality and freedom of voice, you know what I mean, and why it's important to deal with self first and then deal with the masses later. You know what I mean?
But Philip, I mean, in the last two or three years, we have been just hammered by this music belongs to this religion and this music belongs to this religion. And it just so happens that the people who belong to those separate religions are arguing and fighting with each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it's almost raises the emotional level when you put them together like that.
Yeah, I think it depends on where you are. I'm in New York City where almost we're all kind of like mixed, and you go see an Indian concert and you see like blacks and Latinos, and so everybody's a little bit more mixed up. Mixed up in a good way.
Yeah, I guess.
So, I think for me, that's the beauty of what's happening, you know. And in answering the woman's question, the blues for me is always telling a story. You know, the blues is telling a story about my wife, you know, whatever's happening at the time. Hip hop's told a story, blues, jazz, everybody's just telling a story. So it's all music and it's all telling a story. Now, what's happening if they were to come down over the last 10 years and listen to the music of today, they'll hear the influences of African music or pygmy music or the tabla or Indian music and all that. And you'll see that what's happening is we are starting to come together. So I feel like very hopeful that music is what is at the forefront of what's bringing us all together.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. Where are the roots and the directions of hip-hop leading us now? Certainly in the minds of the three people who are in the studio, they're going places that many of us hadn't even imagined. 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. With me in the studio, Rennie Harris, dancer, choreographer, artistic director of Rennie Harris Pure Movement. He's here with a couple of his musical collaborators, Philip Hamilton, vocalist and percussion, and Lenny Seidman, tabla and other percussion. Connection listeners, just a note for you. You can find pictures of Rennie Harris and the performers in Facing Mecca, as well as information about upcoming concerts on our webpage. We are at theconnection.org. You know our number. It's 1-800-423-8255. Next call now from Boston. Trina's with us. Hi, Trina.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is really about what I perceive to be a gender divide in hip-hop. I still feel like the voice is still very male-identified, and I'm wondering, you know, how that is affecting how the music is evolving and how the music is sort of experienced or listened to.
It's a great question, Trina, because, in fact, in this latest performance, Rennie's chosen to use women dancers with the same stature on stage as male dancers. These aren't the scantily clad women in the back of a musical video.
Absolutely. So I would like to hear from the guests sort of what do they think about that, and sort of how can we kind of look at hip-hop as a way for there to be more of an exploration of gender identity through music. And I'll take this question off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for your question, Trina. Rennie, do you want to?
Well, first let me say that, you know, I don't think it's specifically just hip-hop. I think it's the world. And so, and the corporate record companies who push a specific image, and they're playing on the testosterone of young males in urban urban environment. So I think, you know, that's more or less an issue about how we as humans, you know, view our, you know, what's important and what's not important. And of course, then they make, you know, then they exploit the women on top of that through media. So I think it's a media issue as well as the way we govern ourselves as humans on this planet. The second part to that, as far as hip hop is concerned, I've never seen a divide. It's only been, again, through media that it's been divided. It's always been, you know, male and female, from my standpoint.
But the b-boys, the popping and flexing, that's almost exclusively male, or has been.
Well, No, not at all. That's what's projected. You know, there's a lot of B-girls out there.
Yeah.
And most people say B-boy and B-girl. And they're very, I mean, I have few of them dance with me, the top ones in the country.
Right.
So I know, and I've been to the event. So they're out there. But also, let me also say that that doesn't make me afraid or make me think twice, mainly because now you have a dance form that is seemingly predominantly male. Males don't necessarily dance a lot. It's not something that they want to project in the neighborhood or around too much. You know what I mean? There's hardly no male dancers in ballet. You know, they're trying to get males to dance more. But now you have a form that invites the men to a rites of passage to dance. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, you know what I mean? And I don't necessarily think that, even if it was exclusive, I think it was something that, you know what, this is something positive as far as dance is concerned. It's positive for young men to do, instead of, you know, having to go through a different type of rites of passage on the street. But I will say, from experience and from knowledge, that there is no divide. It's the media convincing people that there's a divide. It's what they portray out there, musically as well as dance.
I want to see if I can get a description in the minds of our listeners of the type of dance that you're doing. I had a chance to see a little bit of video of Facing Mecca, and some of what I saw is the b-boy dance, the shoulder rolling and the spinning, all slowed down in a way that makes it a great deal more evocative than watching something that's extremely athletic and you just end up going, wow, how does he do that? In this case, it becomes something much more meditative. Do you
one of the things that was for me, that was on purpose, was that when I first started, I was really bothered by a lot of the reviews that described this as acrobatic, you know, men with no shirts on and a chest out and flipping and energizing, whatever, right? So I began to do some research on reviews that were done, you know, the prior century.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, throughout history, the African community has always had these kind of adjectives or whatever. Become, they never talk about the spirit of it. They never talk about the genius of choreography or way people use specific movement. They talk about all the colors and the costume is great and everyone's flipping and it's so energetic. Every time it's consistent with specific African-American dancers and or companies throughout the history of America. And so one of my thoughts was that, you know what, I'm going to downplay the acrobatics of it and give them hardly anything to talk about other than the work. Tell me if you like it. That's what's most important. Am I choreographing? You know, am I utilizing the space of the work? So I wanted to, you know, so from the beginning in 91, I began to deconstruct a lot of the movement so that people begin to see the beginnings of what hip hop, where it came from. Because before it was at the apex of physicality, mm-hmm. There was a slower thing that was going on. No one talks about it, or we don't see it. So the idea was to deconstruct it as much as possible.
It gives you this range of emotions. It becomes almost mystical, too, when it slows down like that. You get into all those nuance of emotions, like curiosity.
You begin to see the meditative quality of hip-hop. You begin to see the spirit of hip-hop. You begin to see, you know, the pain of hip-hop. You begin to see the life of hip-hop and why. You know, people who've died for it and people who are dying now. You understand, it's like a rebellion. It parallels Bhutto and the rebellion against, you know, the society after the war. It's the same exact thing. But, of course, because we're a media-driven, you know, country, you know, these things are skewed a little bit. They're distorted, you know. And, I mean, this is no disrespect to what's happening, but rather I just want people to understand its history in a better way, because I think people are seeing one side of it. And so now, because they see one side of it, they've beginning to define it. And I'm here to say, you know, although the rappers and MCs are not speaking about it as much as I think they should, because they are the ones who are the griots of the culture. As a dancer, I'm here to say, you know, what we're seeing on television is not hip hop at all.
I wonder if, just listening to your description of what hip-hop dance can be, if I can invite Lenny and Philip to play us a little bit of music that I don't know, Rennie, that might evoke some of what you're talking about. Is there something that you guys would do that would draw us in there, let our imaginations go a little bit? What would you think, Lenny?
A little taste.
And I think it's important, as you're listening to them, take whatever you think is hip-hop movement and place it into the sound. And then watch how, in your mind, that movement, take your whatever dance or whatever video, and watch how the aesthetic of the movement changes.
Lenny Seidman both singing, Lenny on the tablas, and that music is part of Facing Mecca, M-E-K-K-A, which is a new dance piece by Rennie Harris, Pure Movement. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Durham, North Carolina now, and Shane's with us. Hi, Shane.
Hey.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I was wondering if you guys had experienced any animosity as far as the show's name with the climate toward Islam here in America.
No, not that I know of. Just people are interested because of the climate, you know.
But questions, though. I mean, are you guys, an Islamic dance group or what?
Some people, you know, honestly, it's not as much as I expected. I mean, I started working, the title came in 1998. Unfortunately, we opened the week we went to war. Is when we premiered the work, you know, so people were a little tense and it was really emotional, the work itself. But really, you know, we didn't receive a lot of flack, or mostly questions about, I think people just assume that it's about the war or about 9/11 sometimes, so they don't ask as much. But rather, you know, this piece was based on the history of humans here on this country and on this planet and our spiritual journey. And Mecca, why I chose Facing Mecca, Mecca means for me the truth. You know, the truth within us, facing myself, facing, you know, my own demons and dealing with how do I reach the God within in that way.
Now, you guys are going to be on stage at 7 o'clock tonight and again the night after that. And from what I hear about the program, this is kind of open to anybody here. It changes every night. Does the music change as well and the dance as well?
Yeah, we kind of keep it fresh, which is, you know, the beauty of working with someone like Rennie. You know, he leaves it open. I mean, we have the structure is there, but just like jazz, as you mentioned earlier, we play within that structure. So you could see it. I know some people who've seen it early on, you know, when we were touring it about 4 months ago, and have seen it recently and say, you know, things have totally changed. But each night we kind of challenge each other. And actually the musicians are the ones I feel inspiring the dance, and the dancers inspire the musicians too.
Lenny, would you agree with that?
Totally. In the beginning of the tour, I was not involved in a vocal section, for example, at the end, a very powerful vocal section. But gradually I started singing a Kabbalistic chant that is going on in combination with some of the wonderful vocals of Philip and some of the great hip-hop recitation of Kenny Muhammad, who is a human orchestra. He's not here tonight at the station, but right. who will definitely be at the show. And with Grisha Coleman, who's another vocalist. So we started experimenting with, you know, mixing these different cultures, you know, vocal cultures, and my father was a cantor. So this music is in my blood, it's in my marrow, and here I have an opportunity to express who I am within this so-called hip-hop culture, which is a testimony to what Rennie's just saying, is that what is hip-hop? Hip-hop is whatever is happening at the moment, and it's absorbing, you know, cultures from all over the place. Same thing with tabla. Tabla, it wasn't mentioned that tabla is an instrument that was that still is used in the temples. It's ceremonial. It's used in ceremonial music. Right. It's very religious in its expression. So I think all the instruments you hear, all the vocals you hear are rooted in some kind of spiritual practice.
So and I just wanted to say also to just, you know, it's to recognize that the whole work is choreographed. What I allow is I allow for inspiration. So when someone does something that, you know, maybe Philip got inspired vocally and it pushed the dancer and the dancer just went off the choreography, that's totally fine.
You don't jump up on the stage going, no.
Because it's all I always say, if you're going to be wrong, be strong and make it a great solo. You know what I mean? And then sometimes personnel changes and so the spirit changes. So I have to allow for the personnel to change and not trip off of it was this way and we have to have it this way. So it changes over months sometimes.
Fascinating having you guys here. Our hour has gone. Rennie, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Lenny Seidman, nice to have you here.
Our pleasure.
And Philip Hamilton, thanks for coming by. Connection listeners, you'll find pictures of Rennie Harris and the performers in Facing Mecca, as well as information about performances on our website. We are at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Get it, 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 get it